Friday night, June 22nd. Yesterday was the summer solstice. David Fitzsimmons, who's the chief of staff for Congressman Tom Emmer, put up a picture on social media that he took of the sunset, and he's like, this is it, guys. 9:06 p.m. This is as late as it's going to get in terms of still having the sun up. And that's always a depressing realization for me, that the days are going to get shorter from here on out. Like, if I had anything to say about it, if I could have a magical effect over nature, I would have it be like this all year round, where the sun doesn't go down until 9 o'clock. I hate it in the wintertime where it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and it's pitch black outside, you know, and I'm coming in here and, you know, it's I've wanted to be in bed for 3 hours just because the sun isn't there. You know, so.
Especially like a night tonight. It's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob Anderson is in studio with us tonight, candidate for U.S. Senate, seeking the seat currently held by Tina Smith. I got that correct.
Yep, that's the lane I'm in.
I had a 50-50 chance of getting it right.
Well, there's been a lot of confusion about it. So, sure. That's just the part. There's two seats up. Amy Klobuchar's seat up, and also the one that Al Franken had to step down from.
Yeah.
So that's a gift for us Republicans.
This is the second time we've had Bob Anderson in studio. This time's going to be, I think, much more illuminating than the first because, you know, we were getting to know each other during that first conversation, and a lot of stuff has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember exactly when we had you in, but there's so much has gone down in terms of both the race and the news and just the state of things, and we'll be able to catch up on all of it. And we're going to have you here for as long as you want to be tonight, and so you're basically like a guest co-host.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity because I sure don't get much media coverage. So you guys have been really good to me, Walter, and Jamar had me on last Saturday night, so I love it.
Yeah,
it's a great opportunity for a candidate like me.
Hey, well, you know, we're happy to provide that. Closing argument, the name of the program. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. You can catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. You can catch up on past programs. Maybe go find that first show we had with Bob Anderson by doing a search for Closing Argument in your iHeartRadio app, and our channel will pop right up. 651-989-5855 if you're out and about on a Friday night and want to give us a piece of your mind, have a question or comment for Bob Anderson. We've got Breanne in tonight producing the show in Brad's stead. Always good to have Breanne with us. So let's get into it. Let's start with, first of all, I shouldn't presume that everybody knows where you're coming from and what your situation is. So let's start with just the facts of who you are and what your circumstances are. You're running for U.S. Senate to replace Tina Smith, who is currently occupying the seat that was vacated by Al Franken after his boo-boos. You're running as a Republican.
Right.
There was an endorsement that took place at the state convention a couple of weeks back. The candidate who was endorsed in this lane, as they say, was Karen Housley. How many other people are vying for this? Are you the only other primary contender?
As far as the Republican Party, I think there may have been one other filing. I'm not familiar with that candidate, but Karen Housley and I are the two that on the Republican ticket that are running on this thing.
All right. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to verify.
And on the Democrat side, though, Richard Painter
has
jumped in over there.
Dumpster fire Richard
Painter. We'll get into
Painter.
That later, too. Oh, yeah. You saw that, huh?
Oh, my. Yeah, we talked about it. We played the audio here on the show, which doesn't do it justice.
You got to see it.
You got to see it, but oh, my.
Yeah. It was interesting. Yeah. I would love that matchup, actually, though, because he left the Republican Party because of Donald J. Trump. Yeah. I came to the Republican Party. That would be a match made in heaven.
That really would be interesting. Yeah. I mean, I would love to see that debate.
Oh, I would, too.
You know, that would be a good time.
Well, the endorsement, I sought the endorsement because I wanted to fight for it. Unlike Tim Pawlenty, who just ignored the whole thing.
Right.
I decided, no, and my team was telling me, Bob, you know, fight for it, and I'll get to, you know, people get to know me. So right. we put a lot of time and effort into it, and I enjoyed the experience. Talked to a lot of delegates, met a lot of people, especially in CD 1, 7, and 8. We had a lot of support. Greater Minnesota is looking for an outsider. They're sick and tired of status quo, and they're really big Trumpers up there. Mm-hmm. We had a great time. So I sought the endorsement. We gave a speech. We had a great video. Everything was there.
I heard about the video. Do you have it available
somewhere? It's on the website. And we also have some other videos that we've put together.
What is the website?
It's BobAndersonForSenate.com or BobAnderson2018.com. You can reach either way. You've got a few different that get you. Yeah, I encourage people to check out the website. It's got a link to all of our social media, and we are very active on Twitter and on Facebook. We've got a national following. I get a lot more love around the country than I do here in Minnesota, because it's tough when you're an outsider in this party. They're not looking for outsiders. So
let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that's one of the most interesting aspects of what you're doing. Now, mm-hmm. when we first talked, I don't think I ever asked the endorsement question of, will you abide by the endorsement?
Well, I had fought that SD 54 special election.
Right. I
remember. That's what set it all in.
Sure. I do remember that conversation now. And so for the sake of the listeners, particularly those who may be involved mm-hmm. in the Republican Party, may be themselves delegates, activists, whatever the case may be, what is your reasoning or your rationale as to why you are running in a primary against their endorsed candidate?
Well, it's such a small group of delegates. I was able to talk to them, but when you're an outsider, I was new to the party. You know, I came from the Independence Party, so I didn't have that inside lane that a lot of people know. And I realized it was an uphill battle. So I told the screening process, when they interview us candidates, they asked me, are you going to go to the primary if you don't get the endorsement? I said, oh, absolutely. I'm not a fool. I said, I've been down this road before. I said, I if you're an insider, you know, the endorsement process, if you're an outsider, it's the primary. You see why, you know.
Let me tell you this. As somebody who's been involved in the internal politics of the Republican Party for almost 10 years, I appreciate that, because how many times, and those listeners who have been involved in these processes at conventions can attest to the fact of the number of candidates who come forward and talk at length about whether or not they're going to abide by the endorsement, but never actually tell you flat out whether they will or not.
Yeah.
You try to have it both ways.
Yeah.
For you to just be like, no.
Oh, I, yeah.
No, I, like, you know, no, what? I'm not doing that. Sorry.
They appreciated that, because they qualified me.
Right.
You know, I had no qualifications on there, but at least I wanted to be upfront and transparent. That's how I am. You know, I don't pander, and I'm not going to whine after I lost it. And then people were pushing back. I said, well, listen, I told them right up front. And they said, you did? And I go, yeah. And I'm sure it cost me, too. I mean, they don't like that, but they were good about it. They were really good to me this time. I'm not going to say anything bad about, you know, I just knew it was a long shot to get those delegates. But in the primary, I got people in the entire state that can vote for me. And I got a lot of people out there in the mental health community, in the dental community, that know Bob Anderson, that they can come out and vote, and they like to have somebody that they can get out there and get fired up about. They don't get fired up with status quo. You know, they like outsiders, come from the private sector, somebody like me that's from the trades. I'm the only one out there that is, and I'm offering three things that these other opponents can't offer. They don't bring it up. I'm going there to serve. That's my number one thing. So I'm not going to accept a pension. I haven't seen Karen Housley offer that on her thing. So that sets me apart right then and there. We're not supposed to go there for a career. That's an incentive when they're giving away pensions. I've had a career in the dental lab business, right? I want to go, and I have a purpose. I want to serve Minnesotans, and I want to also help Donald J. Trump move his America First agenda forward. We've had two obstructionists. The second thing that stands out about me is the health insurance premiums that I've had to pay for my employees and my own family have been skyrocketing before, during, and after Obamacare. So I don't buy into this. I don't know the affection of Republicans with these private insurance companies. It's just like, we need options, and we don't have them. So they haven't done anything. So I would take no private insurance plans in as a senator that my constituents can't get, or anybody here. If we can't purchase into those plans, I shouldn't be getting it as a senator. We're not supposed to be an elite group. We're supposed to be serving the people. So I would only take the same type of plans that you could get, or I could get on the individual market, or on a plan for companies. And the third thing is term limits. I don't call for term limits across the board. I think it's up to the candidate themselves. As a personal integrity of my, I believe in term limits because I know how long it is, how tough it is to get an entrenched establishment guy in there, like John McCain or Lindsey Graham. They don't get out. I will serve 2 terms maximum, but I'll sign a pledge because I know Paul Wellstone said he was only going to serve 2, and he was going to go on for another one. So if I sign a pledge, they're going to hold me accountable. The only thing that's different, though, is I would be serving out the remainder of Al Franken's seat, so it's only a 2-year position. So if you ever want to try an outsider, why not try this one? If I don't live up to what I told the people I would do as a senator, 2 years, Karen Helsley can run against me or somebody else can run against me. Give me a shot. I'll prove to you that I'm the guy. I will get things done, and I'm going to be somebody different.
Bob Anderson in studio with us. He's a candidate for U.S. Senate running as a Republican in the lane to challenge Tina Smith, the seat formerly held by Al Franken. Bob Anderson for Senate.com is the website. You said you can also reach it at Bob Anderson 2018?
Yes.com.
All right.
Starting to come up quite a bit because we're getting a lot of hits, especially after the Trump rally. We were having a blast up there.
Sure. Yeah, well, and I'm looking at it right now, and you know, for a guy who, as you describe yourself, being an outsider, this looks like a very legitimate political website.
It is. I've got a very good team. Well, you're looking at one of them right now.
Yeah,
she's responsible for a lot of. But I've got the thing is we have our grassroots. And if you look at the videos and things, that it's really portraying somebody from the outside, somebody that's never held office. I'm a high school graduate from Richfield High School, graduated in 1975, and I'm in the trades. You know, and everybody's talking about how we got to offer these jobs in the trades. Well, I'm one of them, you know. And the thing is I've had a rewarding career making things for a living. I make teeth. We have a dental lab in Edina. We've been in business for 60 years. My dad started it when he got out of the Navy. And the thing is that we are still in business today because of customer service. Mm. We should all be able to make a good product.
Right.
But it's how you set yourself apart is it's customer service. And that's what I want to do as a senator. I want to represent all Minnesotans. I'm not fighting for the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. I'm fighting for Minnesotans, and I want to help our president move his America First agenda forward because I believe in it. And I like our president. That's why I came to the Republican Party, because of Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Bob, you know, sitting here in the same room with you, looking at you in the eye from across the table, I believe you when you say those things.
Well, I appreciate that, Walter, because like, you and I were on, you know, I mean, we...
No, when we get into the details of policy, we definitely are going to have disagreements. There's no doubt about it. But what I appreciate is that, you know, it's kind of like with the whole endorsement question of will you abide?
Yeah.
And the kind of mamby-pamby, beating around the bush thing that you get from a lot of candidates. In a similar way, sometimes when you're talking to a candidate for office and you ask them a question, you get this answer that's kind of, you know what it's like? My cat coughed up a hairball.
It's
exactly like that.
They're stumbling all around.
There's this noise. Yeah, there's this noise, and they're like, and eventually an answer comes out, and you're just like, ugh.
Oh, I like that.
It's like, what was that?
Well, the thing is, I don't pander. And that's the easiest way to run. I just tell the truth. And it's the easiest. Because if you start pandering and you talk to this audience and you say this and you say that, what are you going to say? It's so easy if you just continually tell the truth. Yeah. That's the easiest thing in life. I mean, everybody's not going to always agree with you, but at least they're going to say, you know, this guy's honest. He's transparent. And that's what we're lacking in politics.
Here's one of the axioms that I try to live my life by. The fact is, some people are going to like you. Other people are going to dislike you.
Right.
You're not going to get away from that.
No, you never will in life.
So why not have it be based upon who you actually are?
Well, right. And right? Even people that are biggest critics of Donald J. Trump, they do say, well, you know, at least you know where he's coming from. You might not agree, but the guy is not going to, he's just going to, sometimes too much, you know, but No, I just, it's for me to run as a candidate, I have to be me. I'm not going to be somebody I'm not, because I wouldn't be comfortable. I wouldn't be able to talk to you like this, Walter. You can tell when somebody's honest, and you can smell somebody that's a fake a mile away.
Right, my God.
Yeah, it's not that tough. Common sense, right?
All right. We'll continue our conversation with Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate, when we return. You attended the rally up in Duluth.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
President Trump. We'll talk about that. And then we'll get into some of the news and some of the issues, and the conversation may get a little less cordial. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
Informative.
The iHeartRadio app.
Find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you know, you may say to yourself, well, how did I get here?
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us this evening. We're joined in studio by Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate, running as a Republican to take the seat currently occupied by Tina Smith. He is challenging the Republican-endorsed candidate in a primary. Primary date is August 14th.
Yes, correct? Yes. I encourage everybody to get out and vote. Even if you don't vote for Bob Anderson, get out there and vote, because it's like an important race that's coming up.
It's, you know, voting, it's too bad that there isn't as much participation in primaries, because it's not like it's difficult.
It's easier than voting
in the general.
Exactly.
Because fewer people show up.
Right.
I mean, it takes you 5 minutes to go in there and do it. And, you know, it's nice to have, as a voter, it's nice to have the sense that you had an impact upon, you know, the overall direction of
the way
things are going.
Well, and I'm, you know, the deal with the caucus, and I appreciate the caucuses, and I appreciate all the longtime activists in here. I'm a delegate, you know, I'm a state delegate too. So I that's what I did when I came in with Trump. Mm-hmm. I caucused, I became a delegate. Everybody was Rubio in the room I was in, but I was like, well, now I know why we haven't been an opposition party, because I was really looking for a fighter and an outsider. But I thought, well, this is the way to do it. Well, the more I've been involved in these processes, it's such a small percentage of the state that votes. It's when you get in a primary, you've got such a wider swath of people that actually can make a decision on this. I think it's too limited in that small group, especially when you're an outsider. It's really tough to penetrate. I don't think Donald J. Trump would be our president. Maybe you might like that, or Jamar might like that. But if we went the caucus way that we have in Minnesota, I think there's not that many states that do it our way still.
Let's talk to Rob in Shoreview. He's got a question for Bob Anderson, running for U.S. Senate. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's one question, kind of three parts. Okay. One is, how much money have you raised? Then secondarily, it's what's your target number of people you have to get in the primary, and how are you going to reach them?
Well, thank you to Walter tonight for giving me this opportunity. Media is going to be a way I'm going to reach out to people. The other thing is the money. The money, you know, I think you're going to be surprised when we file our next filing. We are raising money. The establishment's first question is not, what are you on this issue or that issue? How much money have you raised? That's the biggest problem we've got right now. It's all about the money instead of the quality of the candidate. What I would like to do is, and what I would encourage you to do, is contact the party and say, Karen Housley, you got $800,000. You've never answered a question. You've never been willing to debate Bob Anderson. You're a three-term state senator. What do you got to worry about? This guy's a dental technician. So I want to get out in the people to let us see us in a forum, and that's another way of me getting my message out. And then your other one was the money. I told you we'll have fundraising numbers that you'll see. I would encourage you to talk to the same media that have had my opponent on and say, let's have some fair treatment and let Bob Anderson on. And I think the people will see me and they'll see a completely different candidate.
What about targets in terms of the primary?
The primary, we've got to get as many people as out as we can. And I think we're going to shock a lot of people, because we had 1,500 maybe in the delegate race up there, because not everybody showed up on a Friday. My chances are much better outstate Minnesota, because we've connected with a lot of people. I think you'll be surprised in the primary.
Do you have a follow-up, Rob?
I'm just kind of curious. Do you have almost every campaign has a target number of how many votes they think they need to win. What's yours?
Well, we got a pool of 200,000 voters coming out there. I'm going to have to attract people like Donald J. Trump did, that are going to come back from all walks of life. It's, I can't depend on Republicans to pull me through on this primary. That's the beautiful thing. I'm big in the mental health community. I'm a big mental health advocate. I've got people out there. I've got people in the dental community. I got people of all walks of life that are just looking for something different, not a status quo politician.
Appreciate the call, Rod. Appreciate the questions. To the question of money, you know, I understand, particularly given the nature of the type of campaign you're running and being an outsider and what have you, that it, you're going to want to de-emphasize the importance of money.
Oh, right, right.
But
it takes money.
It takes money.
It does.
Right?
It does.
So, you know, do you have a, yeah, and you don't have to disclose it.
No,
you don't have to show your cards, but is there a plan to actually at some point gain traction on that front, because you're going to need it?
Well, definitely. But, I mean, it's very difficult to attract money when you don't get any media. I mean, if you think about it, we get Karen gets on whenever she wants, and the reason she gets on is because she's got money. She's got a lot of money.
So it's the chicken and the egg.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Walter.
Well, then how did she do it, though, then?
Because she's got name recognition. She's got a wonderful husband, Phil Housley. But you know the problem? He's not the candidate. She's got the name recognition. If she's so confident that she would be, I'm thinking about the general election. If I had confidence in Karen Housley winning in the general, I wouldn't run in the primary.
You don't think she can win?
Oh, God, no. She hasn't proven to me. She can't even debate me. How can she go up against Richard Painter or Tina Smith? I mean, seriously, Walter, think about it. What is she worried about? Look how many governor forums we had.
Listen,
I bet you we had 10. We have not had one. Not
sure.
One.
Well, and I would be very interested in seeing a hypothetical senatorial forum with you and Karen Housley, just to see the contrast. And unfortunately,
yes.
And look, I like Karen. I'm not going to sit here and, you know.
It's Karen, isn't it? Karen.
Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and pretend otherwise.
Well, a lot of people like her. I like her.
But
I want to win.
I can't acknowledge that. I think the difference that would emerge between the two of you has less to do with policy positions.
I think there's a big difference.
Well, I'm not saying there isn't, but what I'm saying is in terms of the type of responses you would get in a forum, that it would have less to do with the content of those positions and more to do with the fact that you express them and she doesn't.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, the thing is, she is status quo. I mean, basically, I'm not happy with our legislature. I don't like the health insurance, reinsurance they passed that she voted for. Do you think that was an improvement that now us taxpayers are the bailout mechanism for private insurance companies that are being subsidized?
The reinsurance?
Yes, that was a joke. When we put our Republicans in there, I was hoping that we'd get something. We had 8 years to come up with a different plan than what Obamacare was. They did nothing.
Yeah.
We're not getting any relief, and if we are, it's because of subsidies for private insurance.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I understand that you, from your position, you are criticizing Karen Housley.
Yeah, because she wants to stand on her record.
From my position, I'm not trying to criticize her. I'm just observing the fact that the style of campaign that she's engaged in is one where you try, at least from my perspective, seems to be one where you try to say as little as possible in order to be as palatable as you can be to the broadest swath of people, which there's a conventional wisdom to that. But going back to our observations earlier about, you know, enjoying the frankness and enjoying the candor, you know, as particularly as somebody who has a talk radio show, I appreciate that. I want to get into talking about issues, and I know that's something we'll do with you here tonight.
Well, and you know, the fact that she says she likes to stand on that record, you know, they've increased spending, you know, 10% or whatever. Well, come on out then. Let's get this out there. And that's the thing about being an outsider. Yes, I don't have the name recognition, but how do you get that name recognition? And if they would have me on, like if Tom Hauser has her on like he did, and then people call me and they say, Bob, I just saw Karen Hauser. How come they never have you on? You know? Mm-hmm. And I say, call them and ask them. Esme Murphy, same thing.
Yeah.
That's a disservice to the voters of Minnesota to not let us both, because you know what's going to happen? We're going to get in the general election and we're going to not win.
All right, we got to go to a break. We got another caller who has a question for you. We'll come to him when we come back. Continue to take calls, 651-989-5855, talking with Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate. And we haven't even talked about the Trump rally yet. We got to get into that, and then we'll get into some news and issues as well. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
Find us on...
We're tight.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. In studio with us, Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate. BobAndersonForSenate.com is the website. You can catch us streaming tonight on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. We're here 9 to 11 weeknights. It's great having you with us on this day after the summer solstice. The days get shorter from here on out, folks. It's but the funny thing is, though, is that that moment comes so early in the summer.
Yeah.
There's so much more summer left to enjoy.
We hope.
There will be. But, you know, for the days to start getting shorter before the 4th of July, even, you know.
Right.
But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. We've got Eric from Uptown on the line. He's got a question for Bob Anderson. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
My saddest day is always the 21st when it begins to lose a little bit of light there. Yeah. And my question for the candidate, I'll just lay this out. If we consider ourselves a border state now, and then we have tariffs with Canada, and then we're a border state with marijuana or cannabis, we're hearing from our farmers that, you know, we're taking hits as far as our production with pork and whatnot. We're losing some finance there. We're not producing enough. We're not being able to sell our pork, I guess. Okay. But now marijuana is legal. We turn into a border state. It's going to be coming over. Canada's legalized. Does this make a difference in your opinion now, how we're going to handle it? Do you see this as maybe something replaced like the tariff losses with maybe a rotational agricultural crop?
Well, on the tariffs, there's certain industries that are loving the fact of it. I would like to see no tariffs on anything, but I do think we've been getting ripped off, and I appreciate we have a leader in Donald J. Trump that's going to fight from, you know, a strength position, and some of them have come around on the tariffs. So as far as the marijuana issue, it's going to be something that I really don't have an opinion. I've been asked about if we're going to get it in Minnesota, but I think the tariff issue, if you could let me know more about what you, I know there's farming industries that are not as pro on these tariffs as maybe the steel industry. On the marijuana part of it, the drugs are coming across. Are you talking about legalizing marijuana as a crop, or what were you talking about?
What I'm saying is we've had tariffs now in place, and we're taking, some of our farmers, our ag is taking hits.
Yep.
And, you know, so we're able to sell as much as we were, and that's in that one area. And then we have farmers, and we produce, you know, we're big in ag here.
Yep. You know, ag is huge. It's one of the largest.
It can come in and make money from. How do you see, I mean, Canada's now legalized, I'm not even talking about the drugs.
Okay.
I'm just talking about Canada now has legalized marijuana. Right. We've become a border state.
Yep.
You know, based on the flow, you know, what can or cannot come in, I'm not going to debate that. What I'm just saying is, as a rotational crop to help our farmers get more ag product out, how do you see that? I mean, Monsanto is joined with Bayer. They're in Germany actually controlling, you know, like a great deal of the market. And Canada is actually sending all of their stuff to Germany. So it's this major financial market that's opened up. And I'm just curious how you see that affecting our farmers.
The farmers, the egg is a huge industry in our state, probably the largest. So I'm in manufacturing. So all of these tariffs that Donald J. Trump is in the battles with right now, there's parts of the industries that are loving it. There's parts of it that aren't. I know the farmers are concerned about deals, and that is a huge issue. But I also when it comes to these tariffs, I think we have to have fair trade. So
I've accepted the tariffs.
Yep.
I think most people have. I'm Make America Great Again through and through.
Right.
And I've accepted those tariffs, but I'm looking now at an industry that's been legalized. Donald J. Trump, our president, has said he loves the fact, you know, he makes money and he knows this is revenue. And how do you see, if you were sitting in front of him, how would you see that as revenue? What would you be saying as a farmer to Donald J. Trump, President Donald J. Trump? I mean, you've got a minute. How would you say it? And I don't mean to put you on a spot.
No, I know. And I'm not going to pretend I know a lot about that issue side of it. I know there's even other parts of the NAFTA bill that the farmers are benefiting from, where in manufacturing and other things. So I don't have a position on the marijuana. I think I got a little bit off thinking it was because of the legalization in Canada and other states. And I do think Minnesota will probably be in line for that to happen also. And there would be a revenue source coming in on the tax part of it. But I don't have a position strong enough to give you an honest answer on this if I was sitting in front of Donald J. Trump.
If you could just have your people look into it. And, you know,
that's a very good point, and I appreciate you bringing it up, because to be honest with you, it's the first time I've had that part of the farming issue. But I do know by going around all of the greater Minnesota that the farming issues, agriculture is huge, and I am pro-farming, because anybody that's producing a product, like I produce teeth, I know what it goes through with all these different things. So, but the marijuana is a tough issue either way, because I've been getting hammered back on that too, if we're going to have legalized recreational marijuana. There is a revenue source there. So I appreciate your question, and I'm you know, I wish I had a better answer for you, but I'm not going to lie and pretend I know more about it. So
appreciate the call, Eric. And you know, I think what it's indicative of is the notion that when you put your thumb on the scale of one end of the economy,
mm-hmm.
what Eric seems to be suggesting is that it creates the opportunity to try to compensate for that by making changes in another area of the economy.
And it is true. There is farm issues that do get affected, because Trump wants to renegotiate NAFTA also.
Right.
And maybe we're coming out on the heavier side on that. We're in manufacturing and other things. I mean, even in dentistry, when I'm in, they've been outsourcing to China. And I'm a big, I do not like the outsourcing. I think that's been a short-sighted thing. I want the jobs here. And farming is huge here, so we, you know.
So let's talk briefly about the experience of being at the Trump rally on Wednesday. You went up there. What was your feel or your impressions of the crowd, of the folks who got up to speak, and of the president himself?
Oh, I was so excited that the president was coming here, because I've seen him in rallies in other states. And it says, you see Donald Trump on TV. I really like him, but a lot of people don't like him. But even if you see him on TV and they like him, when you see him in person, he's completely different. I mean, he's down to earth. You wouldn't think a billionaire like Donald J. Trump, but I think the crowd in that arena loved it, and we had a blast. I was right up front, so I was excited to see the enthusiasm and the people having such a good time. Everybody I was asking, they were thrilled. So to me, it was huge for him to come up. The place was packed, and there were people outside. There were a lot of people that didn't get in, people that we knew that were up there too.
Yeah.
And I just think it shows that Minnesota, especially greater Minnesota, there's a lot more for support for our president than the media lets on. And it showed up there. And I think if you talk to other people that attended, it was huge. And there was some protest outside after, but I didn't see any real big issues or anything. And I think, you know, Duluth itself is pretty liberal.
Yeah.
And we had some people coming around, but I think for the most part, people had it was a thrilling experience to be up there. And it brought in a lot of excitement.
It is truly unique, this air that surrounds President Trump.
Yeah.
That's very different than anything else that we've seen before. I mean, you know, Barack Obama had this kind of celebrity nature to his presidency, but it wasn't like Trump.
No.
Nothing has come close to this in terms of, you know, the way I described it. We were talking with Sam Sansevier, who's of the morning show,
yep.
And she was up there too.
Yeah, she was interviewing people out there.
Yep, and the analogy that I came up with is that it's like a rock concert.
Yeah,
it really is.
Like, it really is. That's what it feels like when you're in there too.
Well, and the things that he says, like his his spiel is the things that you've heard him say before.
Oh yeah.
In much the same way that when you go to hear your favorite band, you're going there to hear the songs you've heard before.
Exactly.
And, you know, and it functions as entertainment.
Oh.
And it serves that purpose of rallying people up and getting them excited and energized, which is what a political rally is supposed to do.
Well, he came walking out. We were in the front row, and we had a jersey because we, you know, we're in the basket of deplorables too. You know, Hillary gave us a gift by calling us irredeemable deplorables. I mean, I don't seem like a deplorable, do I, Walter? I mean, really. I mean, that was
I mean, we're going to get into some issues here
giving.
Later. Maybe.
So,
I don't know.
We had the jersey, and it had winning on the front, you know, and it had Trump's hair and everything.
Yeah.
So, and then on the back, it said 45, you know, winning. Well, Trump's walking by, and we're holding out there. Dave Sanchez has it out there and everything. And Trump looks right at us and he points at it and he goes, yeah. And then he says, come on. And he wanted it. So Dave throws it up and it just came a little short. So Trump's reaching over there and everybody's cheering and everything. So the Secret Service comes over and they grab it and he gives it back. And I said, no, give it to the president. So he goes, okay. So it got to the president and he's cheering. You know, he's just like us when you get in there and the people are charged up. But that's how Trump is. Yeah. I mean, who else is going to say, hey, come on, throw it up here, you know? Right. So he gets up there, and then when the crowd's just getting into it, you know, he steps back, and he just kind of, he knows how to work the crowd. But you can tell he really loves it. Yeah. I mean, that's a feel that you get. You don't have to hear it from me, because, I mean, you know, I really like him. But I think there's people in there, especially this couple that was by me, and they'd never been in one, and they're just like, wow, I can't believe. And young people. Sure. A lot of families had younger, and I was asking them, what do you think? And they go, oh, this is that's history. I mean, this is huge. Those kids will never forget it.
Yeah.
You know, I never experienced anything like
that. You know, it's interesting. You bring that up about kids. It never even occurred to me. My kids, the next time he comes to town, yeah, I'm going to make sure I can take.
Oh, if you could get in, Walter, I think you'd, it was positive. There was a couple of protesters, and you know, Trump, he's like, oh, we got one pro. I mean, there was a few more than one, but he's like one. You know, he's a riot. I mean,
all right. We got to go to a break. Yep. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Bob Anderson in studio with us tonight. Candidate for U.S. Senate. Bob Anderson for Senate.com. 651-989-5855. Twin Cities News Talk. AM 1130. 103.5 FM. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
Sean.
Talking with Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate, running as a Republican. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855. So let's get into some of the issues, some of the news, some of the things that are a little bit more controversial. We've had a pretty jovial and cordial conversation thus far. Maybe we'll get into some things here where we differ,
yep,
on policy. But nonetheless, that's instructive in terms of letting people know where you stand. And one thing we've definitely established during the conversation up to this point is that you're not fake.
Thank you, Walter.
You don't hesitate to say exactly what you think and exactly how you feel.
And so, I don't have, you know, I might not have all the right answers, but at least they know I'm honest and I'm transparent.
Right. So that's a very good thing to have established prior to getting into some of these.
I appreciate that.
So, of course, you know, the big news going on right now has to do with immigration. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the separation of children at the border after illegal crossings of migrant families. And the latest here comes to us from Politico. President Donald Trump on Friday put a spotlight on families who lost loved ones killed by undocumented immigrants, calling them victims of permanent separation as he sought to shift the attention away from his administration's recently halted policy of separating migrant families at the border. Now, here's the thing. As you know, regular listeners to the program know, I have a position on all of this that is not necessarily in sync with where the administration is at. Okay. Let's put it that way. Even so, it drives me nuts that the media continues to describe it as the administration's policy of separating migrants.
And it's not.
No.
No. The other administrations, this is the law that's been in place, but Donald Trump is just enforcing the laws that are already in place.
Right, and that have been in place for years.
Exactly. And the thing is it's still illegal, right?
Right.
And families do get separated with a lot of different things. If somebody goes to jail, they're separated.
Right. If somebody robs a bank, right.
And the other thing is that if the other administrations, like even the Obama administration, really cared about these kids and really cared about why didn't they do something when they had control and could have taken care of it.
Sure.
And then you see these kids, and nobody wants to see kids, especially some of these stories that they're showing.
Yeah.
And Trump, you know, they brought up, there have been a lot of, you know, we have sanctuary cities and things where people that have gone back and forth, you know, the Kate Steinle deal in California. Mm-hmm. And there are illegals that are in that have gone back and forth and killed loved ones here that people. So that's just countering that thing. But I still think in this policy, it's been in place. He's a strong leader, and he was enforcing the laws that are already, even on our immigration on the border. If we just enforce the laws we already have, we wouldn't need new ones.
There's a piece here, the Daily Wire, from today. 11 MS-13 gang members have been charged with the kidnapping and murder of two teenage boys from Virginia, announced by the Department of Justice on Friday. All the gang members who have been charged are in their 20s and originally from El Salvador, though it's unclear if they're here legally or illegally in the United States. So, you know, this point that Trump made today in his pushback against the media narrative, look, as just looking at it strictly from the optics of politics,
right,
very effective.
Well, Donald Trump, in the background, has been rounding up a lot of these, and they're taking them in. It doesn't get mentioned in the news. Mm-hmm. This part that's going on right now with the separation is what the media is all about. And plus, they're trying to avoid talking about the FBI corruption and all the FISA memos and all the things that are testifying in Congress right now. They've been really not talking about. So Donald Trump, that is the true fact. And if this was just announced today, I didn't hear about that. But I know that behind the scenes, he has been very aggressive in arresting and pulling in a lot of these gang members that have been causing a lot of havoc in our country. And he's dedicated to take care of that because his first responsibility is to protect all of us and for our safety. And there is these gang members that are very nasty, like he says. And yeah, I don't know if the facts, but if you'll hear him, how many of they have really rounded up has not been in the media, but it's astounding how many they've captured.
We'll talk with Pete in Bloomington when we return and continue our conversation with Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate, and get more into this immigration policy and other things that are in the news as well. Closing argument, my name's Walter Hudson, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Having a good time in studio this evening with Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. You can catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We're here 9 to 11 weeknights. Appreciate you joining us, sharing your Friday evening with us. 651-989-5855 is the number to join the conversation, contribute, ask a question of Bob Anderson. Bob Anderson for Senate.com.
Yes.
Is the website. You can go ahead and check that out. We got Pete on the line from Bloomington. He's been holding for a while, has a question for you or a comment. I don't know which. Welcome to the program, Pete.
Well, thank you. I wanted to welcome our guest there. And
thank you.
I can't vote for him, but that's because I got Jason Lewis. And I travel between Lake City and Bloomington, so but I live in Lake City. But anyhow, I just wanted to say, you know, I think we've had enough years of politically correct, smooth-talking politicians who don't actually tell you the truth. I'd much rather take someone who's kind of telling you the truth and maybe he's a little coarse about it, but you know you're getting how he really feels and the truth. And I know you said that, Bob, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate that, Pete. The thing is, I'm running in the statewide race, so if you're in the 2nd District, CD, or 3rd, or anywhere else in the state, you get to vote for Bob Anderson. So.
I'm having a brain fart. I'm thinking,
well, that's okay.
I was driving.
No, that's perfectly fine. I'm encouraging everybody to get out and vote in that primary, too, even if they don't vote for Bob. Vote for, especially Attorney General Doug Wardlow, because we really got to... This is going to be a battle.
That's a solid point. There are multiple reasons to get out on August 14th.
Yep. We really, if we're going to make a difference, I mean, we might as well get out and vote. It doesn't cost you anything. It's not going to take a lot of time. It's going to be easier, like Walter was saying, in the primaries to vote. So I agree. And I appreciate the kind words you have. I am just a straight shooting guy. I'm going to tell it the way it is, the way I feel, and I'm not going to pander. I'm just going to tell you the truth. And if I see something out there that I don't, you know, I'll say something. So I appreciate that, Pete.
Well, thanks for correcting me.
And oh, that's okay. A lot of people say, yeah.
But I definitely try to get out on August 14th, and that was the other thing. People need to get out, you know.
Yes.
Republicans need to get out, and we need to vote and take part in this. And,
right.
I think our country's gone in a really bad direction for a long time, and we finally got a president who's created the best economy I've ever known in my lifetime, you know, so... I think people got to wake up and see the results and quit worrying about all the political correct smoke everybody's right. always blowing.
Well, like I tell people, even my own family, you know, if you sit around the kitchen table and complain and whine, but then don't get involved, I mean, really, if you really feel that strong, get out and vote and make a, you know, make a difference because you have a choice.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you, Pete.
Appreciate you contributing to the program. Have you seen, Bob Anderson, the new cover of Time magazine?
Yeah. It was on when we were in here. That was...
You know, it's fascinating. I don't know if... Because I haven't listened to anybody else talking about it, so I don't know if anybody else has made this observation, but have you noticed that it's a red background with white trim and black lettering? Now, when you think of a red background and then white and black in the middle of it, what does that remind you of?
Well, the fact of the red would, I don't know the symbol of it. I just noticed that the kid was the, it was not true what the story
that's
was.
Correct. And exactly. we're about to get into that. But what I'm trying to get at here is that as a piece of propaganda, this is incredibly insidious because not only is everything that it's attempting to convey factually incorrect, and we're about to dive into that here over at the Daily Wire, but that framing of it in that way is very clearly, to my mind, meant to evoke the Nazis. That's what they're trying to convey, is this is the Nazis in America, Donald Trump. You know,
pretty low.
Yeah, it's not good stuff. From the Daily Wire, written by the incomparable Ben Shapiro, on Friday, Time magazine defended its controversial cover of President Trump glaring down at a crying immigrant child, even though that child was not separated from her mother. Her mother was falsely claiming asylum. Her mother had illegally immigrated in the past, and Trump's policy with regard to that child was precisely the same as Obama's.
Seth, now isn't that something?
Here's Time's explanation for their lying cover. They wrote that on the June 12th photo of the two-year-old Honduran girl became the most visible symbol of the ongoing immigration debate in America for a reason. Under the policy enforced by the administration prior to its reversal this week, those who crossed the border illegally were criminally prosecuted, which in turn resulted in the separation of children and parents. Our cover and our reporting captured the stakes of this moment. That was their defense. And, you know, nobody puts it better than Ben Shapiro does here in terms of what this means. He says, actually, the cover is a lie. And instead of recognizing that, Time doubled down on that lie. It was, to repeat a phrase used by Dan Rather's defenders to describe his fictitious evidence of George W. Bush going AWOL as a member of the National Guard, fake but accurate. And that's exactly correct. Their defense of this piece of propaganda, and there's no other word for it, it is deeply biased, journalistically inaccurate political propaganda. Their defense is, well, yeah, but it's spiritually, like, it tells what we think is true.
Well, and that's what's ridiculous, because even the New York Times, they said they were going to throw out their journalistic integrity when Donald J. Trump was running to make sure he never became president. Now, how could that possibly get away with that, too? So, like, when you were talking about the color and everything, you know, I wasn't even thinking about the Nazi thing as much as I was thinking it was fake, and it was preying on people's
emotions.
Well,
it's literally fake.
Yes, it really is.
It's literally fake.
It really is, and it's and the thing is, and then they doubled down. I mean, imagine if Trump doubled down when he says a lot of things, but a lot of things come true that he says, too. But the media is being the biggest part two that is really hurting our country. I mean, they're supposed to report the news. They're not supposed to be making up the news. And the New York Times themselves did this in the very beginning. And then the Huffington Post used to have a disclaimer on their articles, too, that would say, this guy is a psychopathic, homophobic, da, 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 da. Can you imagine that? How can you have credibility when you're saying that, when you're supposed to be a true journalist?
You would think that, you know, if they really are so off-put by the characterization from Donald Trump and others of being fake news, that they would try to disprove that notion by tightening up their standards, by using as politically and ideologically neutral language as possible in their reporting. I mean, we read earlier this week when we were covering the news, there was a piece from the New York Times that reported on Trump's executive order that instructed his lawyers to find a way to not have to follow that 1997 decree regarding the separation. Of children. The first sentence was, President Donald Trump caved.
Yeah.
It was the first sentence. Yeah. Now, caved, that language, that is not neutral journalistic. No. That's not a way to report that.
Right.
That you would expect to read in a newspaper. That is biased. That's the language of entertainment. That's the language of, like, you know, Fox News or MSNBC, right, or one of these, or, you know, Hannity, or these guys who are coming at it from a perspective.
Yes, they're talk shows. They're not. It's not the news.
Right. Yeah. But this is like front page.
Exactly.
New York Times purported informational journalism.
Well, and like I said earlier, that's what they threw out, their integrity, and they made it public. And people still accepted it. But Donald Trump, going through Twitter, actually has more people that follow him than the Times has subscribers. So I think that was one of the side effects from my point, that Donald Trump exposed that there is a lot of fake news out there and there is a lot of bias in the media. Even I have friends now that start looking at broadcast TV, because broadcast news, you got George Stephanopoulos on, like, a, you know, a Good Morning America show. People don't realize, I mean, how could that be true integrity? The guy worked for the Clintons. You'd almost have to have a
right,
show.
Right.
You'd almost have a show on at nighttime, you know, Good Evening with, somebody like Judge Genie on there, you know, Pereiro, you know, because... Right. Broadcast is so huge. Even Fox, you know, cable, everybody thinks, oh my God, everybody's watching. That's minute compared to broadcast TV.
Sure.
And that's what all of our family, friends, and everything watch. They're watching celebrities, all these things, as they get their news from that.
Right.
But it can be slanted. And I think that has been coming out. That's one thing about the Trump, whether you like it or not, the news is under the microscope. And like you said, you would think if at all they try to double down and be stronger on their facts and their journalism. But in that Time magazine, to double down, I don't know. It's really a disservice for all of us. And I think that until people, when they start realizing, if you don't look for alternative news sources out there, you're going to get the same propaganda over and over. And that's what I think is hurting us. Or, you know, the voters aren't educated when they go to vote because they're swayed by the media.
All right. So let's take a more critical look, or at least I'll take a more critical look at what's happening at the border, and then you can tell me, you know, either why I'm wrong or fill in the blanks of where I'm ignorant on the way things ought to be.
Like, I'll give you my opinion on it, but I mean, you know, it's like I'm not going to state that I've got, you know, the facts over years, but we'll see where we end up.
All right, so this is also from the Daily Wire. Yep. Actually, I'm looking at the wrong article. This one's from Politico.
Okay.
President Donald Trump may not admit it, but practically speaking, his administration's zero-tolerance border strategy is dead. Top officials at the Department of Homeland Security acknowledged that reality at a meeting Thursday afternoon, according to a former department official with knowledge of the meeting. It's going to be catch and release because they don't have the detention beds for them, the former official said. That same message was delivered by Brandon Judd, president of a union for Border Patrol agents, who told CNN Thursday that the executive order Trump signed Wednesday requiring families caught at the border to be detained together simply left his agency no choice. We're going to have to release them, he said. Homeland Security and Justice Department officials declined to comment. So what appears to be happening here is that we have a situation where, regardless of the president's conviction regarding, you know, his moral conviction that he should enforce these laws and that any adult who crosses the border illegally needs to be criminally prosecuted, it appears as though we do not have the infrastructure to actually maintain this policy. What needs to happen?
Well, first of all, Congress needs to do their job and do something about this. First of all, it really shouldn't be Donald Trump that this is on. Congress is supposed to have taken care of this, and they haven't. Now they still didn't come up with anything now. They were going to do some immigration reform. First thing first is the wall. That's what Donald J. Trump ran on. If we don't secure the border first, how are we going to ever settle any of these issues? So part of this plan that he was doing, he's looking for that funding for the wall. Don't you think that when they're sending people over illegal and these families are being put up, you really think that the people are caring about the kids, or are they using this like Time magazine did to make a pull at people's heartstrings? This has been going on. You know, the other thing that bothers me too about how they go after Trump, President Obama deported more illegals than all the presidents before him, and he got a second term. Donald Trump was only enforcing the laws already in place, and he was getting crucified when he was first running. Why do you think President Obama got such a pass on that?
Well, because it wasn't so much what he was doing as what he was saying.
But he was deporting. I watched it, witnessed it.
I know. I'm just saying that they'll give you a pass. It's just like the Hollywood stuff, right? Like we had the whole Me Too thing.
Right.
And, you know, when Harvey Weinstein was first caught, you know, he was the first one, the first domino that fell. When he was first caught, his instinctive move was to make a bunch of donations to lefty causes, right?
Yes.
Because historically, that's how you handle it.
Right.
Like, historically, you would go out and signal your virtue, and then all of your leftist brethren would be like, okay, fine, we're okay with the fact that you rape people, you know, which is absurd, but that's how it worked. And a similar dynamic was in play with Barack Obama, where, he was deporting a whole bunch of people, but look at what he goes on the cameras and says. Look at all he's doing for us in these other social justice contexts. Right. So we'll see no evil, hear no evil, because he's the sainted one.
But what hurt him was the Latinos said, hey, we didn't elect you to be deporter in chief. We elected you to be president. And you know what? He changed. He waffled and he pandered and he stopped deporting. So at least Trump, here's a guy that's a leader. He doesn't waffle. He doesn't pander. And then he still gets grief. Even when they said he caved, why would they say he caved? Wouldn't that be a positive thing if they were really caring about these kids that he showed a soft side of him?
Well, and it's not caving in the sense.
No, it's actually.
Because here's where it would have been caving. It would have been caving if he had decided, all right, we're not going to do the zero tolerance thing anymore.
Yes.
If he had said, look, I'm going to reverse my previous executive order and we're not going to enforce the law at the border. That would have been caving.
Right.
But for him to say, no, we're going to follow through on our intention. We're going to seek to make an adjustment in the judicial understanding of this decree in order to allow the families to remain together. That's an accommodation,
right?
Which you know you would think would get some amount.
Would get him a little bit, yeah. So it says you can't win. I don't think there's so many people that just can't stand Donald J. Trump. Period. He could walk on water, and they'd say he can't swim. That's why he walked on water. I mean, this guy can't. There is a certain part of the society that will hate him. And if you can't separate that part, well, then he's never going to get any help. If you look how much he's accomplished already with the negativity from the media, and you got to admit that. I mean, they've been all over him. My God, he's accomplished a lot that he said he was going to do. 64% of his agenda he's gotten done in over 500 days. That's pretty impressive for an outsider coming in.
Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate, in studio with us tonight. My name is Walter Otts. In closing argument, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
The Joe Pesci. Listen live 6 to 9 on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, or anywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
When Donald Trump ran for president, he promised to drain the swamp. And that's language that, you can impose whatever meaning you want on that. You know, it's kind of like hope and change in that way, that it can mean whatever the beholder wants to bring to the table. And I've been questioning and wondering, what does this actually entail, the draining of the swamp? And when are we going to start to really see it? And specifically, a concern that I have is the status quo when it comes to basically how in Congress, in the House, you're running for Senate. We've got Bob Anderson in studio with us. And I don't know what it's like in the Senate. I think it's similar. But in the House, the committee assignments are literally bought and sold. Literally.
On the Senate.
It's the leadership of the parties requires the members to raise certain numbers of money in order to qualify for certain committees or what have you. And that, to me, that's the swamp. That needs to change. And I would love to see the president take a leadership role in fighting against that. But one thing that he is doing that we just learned this week that I find to be a very positive development is he's merging departments.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He's going to merge labor. Yeah. So what's your thoughts on that? And again, it's closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate, in studio with us, 651-989-5855. What are your thoughts on the direction that the administration's taking in terms of trying to reduce the bloated bureaucracy?
Well, I like it. In fact, I've always been, I didn't think we needed a Department of Education on the federal level. I thought it's wiser. So at least merging is consolidating there. I think there's a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in all agencies, not only in the federal, but in our state agencies also. So that was a new, you know, proposal. I really haven't heard that before about merging a couple like that. Maybe they have in the past, but that just came to light with the manufacturing and the education, so the labor. So I appreciate that. But the swamp itself is a lot larger, wider, and deeper than anybody imagined, and I think it's tougher for him to drain it. I appreciate that he's trying it. If Hillary Clinton would have won, we would have never heard about any of this FBI stuff. They even bought an insurance policy, the Russian dossier or Dozier, to cover it up just in case. But when you have the FBI and you have these people actively fighting against one of the candidates running for the president of the United States, we have our highest offices that we think we can trust, and it's even in there. So we no profession is exempt from good and bad, and at least some of this is coming out, and they've been working hard. I mean, I've been listening about this for a couple of years, other people reporting on this. Sarah Carter and Devin Nunes that have been fighting, you know, they're heroes because they're exposing this. We need more journalists, and even the news right now should be exposing the problems that are going on in our FBI, because a lot of people aren't even aware of this. There's going to be more people falling. So that's the swamp I look at. Yeah. And we have people in Congress that are bought and sold and representing the money. So when I hear about this in our state too, about who's got the most money, they're the ones that are going to get on TV and they're going to get this. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Why not get some new breed, new people like myself from the outside that are going to go in there and clean up that culture? Because I'm not going to be bought and sold. I think you can tell that by listening to me and talking to me. I'm not going there for that. I got a career. I want to go there and make a difference. I want to fight and be representing the people, not their special interests. And that's what's happening. Even in our governor's race, Tim Pawlenty, I don't like revolving door politicians, especially after Donald Trump's going in to drain the swamp. We don't want to fill it back up. I don't mind a guy serving. He was our governor. I didn't have a problem with him. But when you become a lobbyist, and then you think you're going to come back and work in the same capacity, who's he going to represent? Wall Street and all the special interests. That's what we're trying to drain the swamp. So I don't believe in that, and I won't be bought and sold, and I can guarantee that, because I'll hold... people will hold me accountable, because when I said what I was going to do, and remember, my position's 2 years, so they'll know right away what kind of a guy I am, and I won't get reelected then.
That being due to the special nature of the election.
This is only a 2 year. People think you're not electing Bob Anderson for the Supreme Court. For God's sakes, if you want to take a chance on an outsider, why not in a seat like this where it's only 2 years? It's like running for Congress. I got 2 years to prove to the people of Minnesota I'm their guy. I'm somebody different. I'm not going to be bought and sold. Let's give them a chance. What do we got to lose? Status quo has got to go. We got to try something new. And I'm not status quo. You know that, Walter.
Bob Anderson running for U.S. Senate. BobAndersonForSenate.com. We'll take your call, 651-989-5855. When we return, closing argument. My name's Walter Atson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Find us. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, closing argument. My name's Walter Atson. Catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. We have Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate, in studio with us this evening. You can join us at 651-989-5855. Got Brianne in, producing the show and taking your calls. Let's talk to Kevin from Lakeville. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for taking my call. Yep. First off, Mexico would never allow their border to be breached like it is. So I wonder, who's paying the money for all these people coming here? And do they have a deal with somebody where Mexico is just opening up their border?
Well, I mean, because the overwhelming majority of these immigrants, as I understand it, that we're currently seeing at the border are coming from south of Mexico. So you're suggesting that they've made some sort of...
I think there's some type of deal. I mean, even through Obama administration, who was paying for all those people? You had a train called the Beast, and they were all over those trains. Somebody had to finance that.
Huh? That's an interesting idea.
Well, that's, I think that, you know, the president wanted to seal the border. He wanted to build the wall, and I support that. And I think before we can get a handle on any of this illegal people coming across the border and drugs coming across the border, we do have to secure the border. And I agree with the president on that, and I would be there to help him push that forward.
I agree with that, too. I think you have the possibility of bioweapons coming across, suitcase nukes, so I think the wall would be a good thing. Now, you were talking about the propaganda.
Yes.
And the propaganda that I'm watching from all the networks, which are nothing but an extension of the Democratic Party, you saw this type of propaganda go on in the 1930s in Germany.
Appreciate the call, Kevin. Appreciate you contributing to the program. We've had, and I know you've got a live stream going on right now, and I know this question's come up there as well. Yeah. We're also seeing it on Twitter. We have some folks who are interested in your thoughts on auditing the Federal Reserve or ending the Federal Reserve. Is that anything that you've given any thought to, or are you still researching that?
Well, I would definitely think that at the very least they should audit the Fed. We need to know. It's an appointed position. I think it's awfully strange that we borrow money, pay interest money, and the least we could do is audit. So there's some accountability.
The monetary policy, the way our currency works, is something that a lot of people don't understand. And and even as somebody who has been schooled on it, I forget all the time because it's not something you think about on your day to day. And they don't want you thinking about it.
Well, especially when you're, you know, I'm a dental technician, but I know of these issues because I've heard it before. But no, that's I agree with that, and you know, Rand Paul was big on that, and Ron Paul. So I think, and that's a popular, and I don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah,
I think we should, but it's
no
a battle.
Downside. What's the downside?
What's the downside? Exactly. Right. No, I agree. I think.
What about thoughts on foreign policy? Yeah, and I'm trying to think of a specific. Well, we had the recent summit with North Korea,
right?
And that was kind of, in my view, that was sort of juxtaposed against getting out of the deal with Iran. It seemed to be two very different approaches to perceived foreign threats. Do you have any principles you're bringing to the table in regards to how the United States should be relating to other actors on the global stage?
Well, I like the fact that our president is peace through strength. I think the Obama administration leading from behind did not work. We need to be strong, just like in anything else. If you show strength, you're going to get respect. I think with the North Korea, people were so worried when he's telling people that I've got a red button on my desk, and you tell that crazy Trump that I've got it, and Trump bounced right back. He didn't cave. He says, hey, I got a button. You tell that guy that's not giving you any water or any food or anything else, you tell him I got a button on my bench also, but it's bigger and it works. And I think Kim Jong-un thought, wow, this guy, I don't know. So, and you know, the sanctions have been crippling him. Right. So I think, you know, everybody thought we were going to be in the nuclear holocaust with Trump talking that way, but sometimes that's the only language these guys understand. They don't elect nice people. They elect leaders. We get to, you know, President Obama was a very popular guy, but his philosophy was leading from behind. That didn't work. We looked weak, and this is my opinion, but I think a lot of people too. Trump is a strong leader whether you like him or not, and it's been effective because whoever dreamt that we'd get that summit together, it's been, is it, long time before we've had any talking. So, and the Iran deal, that was a horrible deal. And I think that they're looking at the stage, too, seeing, well, Trump really does mean what he says he means. He's not going to draw a line in the sand like Obama did, and then they cross it, and you don't do anything. You can't do that. If you're going to set a line, you got to be tough. And Trump is a tough negotiator, and I think some of this is paying off. And I think some of his biggest critics thought, wow, if he could do that, even if nothing comes from this, the fact that they met and the fact that North and South Korea have come to having some negotiations, I think that's been huge. That's one of his biggest things lately. And I think that when everybody thought we were going to be in this, or was a little bit surprised that this even took place. So I feel good about that.
It is interesting because Trump's actions and his words when it comes to foreign policy, you know, I struggle to find consistency in some of the things that he says and does. But he certainly sprinkles in a lot. You know, I mean, you brought up Rand Paul, Ron Paul. Yep. he certainly sprinkles in a lot of rhetoric along the lines of, you know, bringing people home and not wasting money overseas. You know, when he talked about pausing the war games that were taking place, yep. In concert with South Korea, one of the justifications he offered was, why are we spending this money?
Right.
You know, and so it seems there's a little bit of a wheel of fortune to it, as I see it, in terms of, you know, where he's going to land on, right. on his rationale.
Yep.
But it's nice to know from a libertarian perspective that that's in the mix, right. and that it's possible for the wheel to land on that spot and for him to be like, yeah, let's scale it back.
Well, I think he does listen to a lot of different voices. I mean, he didn't get as successful as he did by just, you have to surround yourself with people that have a lot more experience in foreign policy and things than he did. But he's a smart, I think he's a smart guy. I don't know if people think he's crazy. But no, he's a sharp guy, and he listens.
He has, as somebody who has been, to put it lightly, critical of the president.
Yeah.
I'm speaking of myself.
Well, at least
now.
You've been honest and transparent about it, though.
Right. As somebody who's been a critic of Donald Trump, this, I have to grant him this. He is smart.
Yes.
It's a type of intelligence, though. There are different types of intelligence. Right. And where his intelligence lies is in this kind of instinctive social intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about being up in Duluth and seeing him at the rally and yeah. the way he works the crowd yeah. and how natural he is right. with people who are online to see him and what have you. That's a social, emotional intelligence.
Right.
And that, you can't buy that.
No, you can't.
You can't train it. It's something that's just a natural characteristic of certain people, and he has it. And that can be extraordinarily useful if applied in a particular and effective way in a position like the presidency or a position like the Senate.
Right. Right?
And so, you know, to characterize him as being, oh, he's dumb because of this, that, or the other thing. Now, don't get me wrong. He said things.
Oh, I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
He said things that he most definitely should not have said. He has tripped over his own feet strategically and, mm-hmm. and created his own problems in terms of trying to advance his agenda. And, but that's not because he's dumb.
No.
It's because when you're an instinctual person, when you act in instinctive ways, when you have that social intelligence, it's not always well considered. It's
right.
it's very off the cuff. It's very right now. This is on the top of my mind, so that's what I'm going to say. That's what I'm going to do. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, that's the thing that, you know, he comes from the business community. He's schmoozed people from both all sides of it. I mean, he was a Democrat as much as he was a Republican. And everybody thought, well, he's not going to be conservative enough. Well, it's funny that once he got in, he surrounded himself with more of a conservative cabinet in his first judge appointment than a lot of these so-called conservatives that we've had in there before. So I don't think he lacks on that. But I do think he's willing to listen to people. He's got good people around him. And he wants to make the decision, but he doesn't just make it off the cuff. He does listen to these people.
He's not an ideologue.
Yeah.
And we, you know, when folks like myself criticized him mm-hmm. for not being conservative, it was what we were really saying is he's not an ideological true believer like we are.
Right.
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 And that's what we wanted. We wanted a Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
We wanted a Rand Paul. We wanted somebody who was steeped in, you know, the stuff coming out of the Heritage Foundation
yep.
and
yep.
who's somebody who was familiar with the writings of Cato and, you know, Milton Friedman and all these things, you know, Ayn Rand, God forbid, mm-hmm. you know, we wanted somebody who was an intellectual conservative committed to these principles. And Trump is not that and
right.
and was not that and never will be that. That's just not who he
right.
is or where he comes from. But where I think you're absolutely right is that you don't have to be an ideologue to make good decisions.
Right.
You just have to be willing to consider the evidence that's placed in front of you and the arguments that are placed in front of you and to make the right choice in the context that you find yourself. And I do think that Trump is capable of doing that. It's very clear that he's been capable of doing that mm-hmm. in a number of instances.
Well, in his business, I mean, he has had success. He's had failures, but I mean, the easiest way to never fail is never try anything. So, I mean, if you look at his successes versus his failures, he's way on the upside. And the other thing is he was dealing on a world stage also. A lot of his business activities. So it's not like any of these foreign leaders or foreign countries are something new to him, like a small business guy like me. But he is a sharp guy, and he's got courage. And he loves people. And you could tell he loves America. And I see that in him, and I think people see him. Even his biggest critics will say, well, he does seem to be fighting with America's interests first. And that's what I appreciate about him. And that's when, in a Senate position, I could not only represent, and I will represent all Minnesotans. I'm not going to be just, I mean, I'm not going there. Like, what's happened with our two senators now, especially Amy Klobuchar, she started out as a Blue Dog Democrat. She has gone so far to the left.
Is there such a thing anymore?
Well, no. But yeah. The thing with her is, I have to, you know, she should remember that you're representing all Minnesotans, and that's what's lost. And I mean, I'm going to be a conservative voice because I'm completely different than Tina Smith as far as the issues go. But I'm also going to take the fact that I represent Minnesota. So you have to listen, and I will have town halls, and I will take input. I'm not going to, you know where I'm going to lie on my decisions, because I like the America First agenda, our president. I wouldn't want to be Amy Klobuchar or Tina Smith that can't stand his agenda and are always no, no, no. That would be frustrating.
Yeah, it's kind of a sour way to live.
Yes, it is. Exactly. Especially when our people are, you know, people are getting more in their paychecks.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be running on the fact that, no, I didn't support that.
Or that's somehow bad. Like, yeah. Why? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Since when? I mean, that's so, I mean, if I can get the opportunity through the primaries, I like my chances in the general. I contrast completely a lot more, because if you got a state senator like Karen Housley, there isn't going to be a contrast, because they're going to go after her record. They're going to go after, there's plenty more they can do. I would be a tough opponent because I come from a completely different background. I bring a skill set that is totally different than any of the candidates. None of them are offering those three things I was telling you about, and they've been in there, and there's a proven record they haven't. Why aren't other people coming up with those ideas that, instead of being there as an elite group, why don't they be like what I'm talking about and be just average working class that's going to represent the big swath of Minnesota? Appreciate that.
We got Bob Anderson in studio with us tonight, running for U.S. Senate. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. One final segment this evening with Bob Anderson, candidate for U.S. Senate. On closing argument, my name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855. You got about 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes, to get a call, comment, question in for Bob Anderson. We did get a Twitter question for you, Bob, regarding the federal funding of things like light rail and other infrastructure projects here in the state. You know, would that be something that you would support or target for elimination when you head to Washington, D.C.?
Well, the light rail, we need plenty of road, bridges, and infrastructure work done in this state. The light rail, you know, unless we have the demand, unless it can suffice, you know, it's so heavily subsidized that I would prefer buses over the light rail. I don't have a problem with having public transportation. We do have the light rail now, but I think it'd be much more effective having more buses if the demand is there. And some of these routes that we have right now, express buses, are popular. Mm. But unless we have the demand for the light rail and we're going to be able to take care of it on its own without the... It's so highly subsidized right now, it's not cost effective. Our money would be better spent on our roads and infrastructure.
You know, one thing I learned over the past couple few years that I didn't know before was that the light in light rail actually refers to the fact that it's light capacity. That by design, it will always have to be subsidized. By design, it's never going to, you know, break even or, right, God forbid, turn a profit, because it's not designed to carry enough people in order for that to happen, which just seems insane to me. I mean, the thing about buses, the thing a bus can do that a train can't, turn.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, it's got a lot more. Yeah, it's you can go, you can alter it. I mean, right, the track is there. It's just like, I mean, I like the light rail when I go down to the Vikings games, sure, and things. It's a great way, but, you know, I'll take a bus. I mean, the State Fair, when they have all those buses going, people use it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I believe in public transportation. I mean, we do have to have transportation, but that light rail is not a cost effective. And
well, and look, it's like the North Star line and, you know, the light rail. these are the ways that my kids get to ride on trains. Right,
right. Right.
And so I enjoy that. They enjoy that. But I don't need the taxpayer to pay for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll go take them on, you know, a St. Croix River Valley Railroad experience or whatever. I don't need to have a taxpayer subsidized version of that. And it doesn't. It's not the most effective way to transport people.
No, it's not. And but it, like I said, State Fair, I'll take buses, and to the game, I do take the light rail. We have it there in place. But no, I'm not supporting more light rail funding.
All right. The other thing I wanted to touch back upon, we did touch it a little bit earlier in the program, is the question of tariffs. There's an article here from the Foundation for Economic Freedom, a source that I turn to on a semi-regular basis. They write, in the aftermath of a financial crisis that wasn't financial, they're talking about the 2008 housing crisis, various federal agencies levied all sorts of fines on banks and investment banks. It didn't matter that the crisis was wholly a creation of federal intervention in the form of bailouts, in the healthy decline of certain financial institutions, with the federal government desperate to shift the blame for its incompetence on others, already struggling corporations were forced to hand over tens of billions of that to that same federal government. And then the author compares that to what's going on right now with the tariffs. He says, President Trump's confirmed last week that tariffs are going to be imposed on Chinese exports. The number that various media outlets reported was $50 billion. Trump raised taxes on the American people by that amount is basically the claim that they're making. You know, I maintain that tariffs only serve a destructive purpose in the economy because what you're doing is you're telling people if they choose to import from another country, it's because that's the highest value at the lowest cost. And by raising a tariff, you're getting in between them doing that, which means they're getting less and having to pay more for it. I left you 20 seconds to address that really important economic concept, but what are your thoughts?
Well, we produce here. I would rather produce in America and export. Well, we're paying tariffs on our exports. They're not paying on them coming in. So I like fair trade. I like free trade, but I like fair trade. I don't want tariffs, but I want them to bring their tariffs down.
Bob Anderson for U.S. Senate, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
Broadcasting on AM 1130.